From high atop Five Bush Media World Domination Headquarters in Rochester, New York, welcome back to the Top of the Tower podcast. Yes, we've been missing for a little while. Stuff was going on, what can I say? But we are back now, back into a regular weekly season of podcasts. We will be here for you every Wednesday, give or take, here on FiveBush.com. And there is a lot to talk about in this week's edition. We are going to hear in just a few minutes from Dave Colasar of Hubbard Radio in Washington, D.C., where they are now experimenting with an all-digital AM IBOC mode, an all-digital AM HD radio mode, if you will. And we'll get into the nitty-gritty of both the business case behind it and the technology behind it and answer some questions that have been percolating out there. So we'll hear from Dave in just a few minutes. We'll also be talking with Ricky Lee about his attempts to try to use the FCC's new foreign ownership rules to buy a station in New York's Adirondacks. That's all ahead on the podcast. First, a couple of pieces of breaking news this week.
WNEWFM, WNEWHD1, WNYLHD2,
New York.
The all-new 1027.
A radio.com station.
My station.
A beat variety.
Are you ready?
And the commercial-free workday.
So that was the new sound of 102.7 in New York. That, of course, is Entercom's WNEW. It's been Fresh FM for the last 11 years or so, and they have refreshened it up. In any event, on Monday, they changed things up there at 102.7, mixed in a little bit of older material going back as far as the 90s into the Hot AC playlist that was already there, and have created for themselves sort of a new attempt to challenge the dominant Hot AC in New York, which is iHeart's Light 106.7 WLTW. Of course, Light is a little bit of a misnomer. If you listen to 106.7 in the last few years, you'll know that a lot of its playlist actually overlaps with Z100 doing full-on top 40 down the hall. So there is a play being made there to try to get that New York City at work audience. Will that be enough to make this radio station successful after a lot of years of sort of flailing along? We shall see. It is, in any event, the second format change that Entercom has made in a little less than a year since taking over from CBS Radio. Of course, they were very quick to rebrand what had been 92.3 Amp Radio, which had been competing directly against Z100, to rebrand that as Alt 92.3 last fall. So we'll see how that goes there. There are facilities on the move in a couple of areas, including New York City, construction underway right now by SBS Radio. They are moving out of the mansion that they have owned on West 56th Street, which has a lot of real estate value behind it and is in the process of being sold. They're headed downtown now to new digs on 26th Street. There are some pictures that are up now, some of their new studios. We're going to try to get down there for a visit for Tower Site of the Week sooner rather than later, we hope. We are also trying to get over to Boston because there are big things happening in Boston radio. One of the big moves that resulted from the Entercom CBS spinoffs last fall just took place on Monday. The Sports Hub, 98.5 WBZ-FM, which had been CBS Radio, which CBS Radio couldn't keep under the antitrust rules and had to get traded off to Beasley. That has now moved out of its longtime studios in the old Channel 38 building in Alston. And that has moved into brand new and, from the looks of it, really nice-looking studios over in Dorchester at the Beasley facility there on Morrissey Boulevard. So we're going to try to get down there and see that. The next steps that will happen after that, WEEI, the Entercom sports station that they kept, will eventually apparently be moving from its studios on Guest Street, just a couple of blocks over, to the other studios in the old Channel 38 building down on the ground floor where Sports Hub had been. So those are getting a renovation, and that'll become WEI's home coming up, we're hearing, around October. Before that, in August, WBZ-AM, which went from CBS to iHeart, will be joining the rest of its iHeart sister stations up at iHeart's facility up in Medford on Cabot Road. And those studios are under construction. We know they've been bringing in engineers from other iHeart groups around the country to try to get those done in time to get WBZ-AM moved in there. Apparently by the end of August, WRKO, which moves over from Entercom, will also be joining it there. And I believe WZLX has already moved from Alston up to those Medford facilities. And then WKAF, the new 97.7, will also be moving up there. So lots of stuff on the move up there, and we will be following along with that both on Tower Site of the Week and bringing you all of the headlines about that in Northeast Radio Watch. A reminder, if you are not reading Northeast Radio Watch every Monday, you are missing out on the most comprehensive source of news and information about what's happening in the broadcasting world in the northeastern U.S. and eastern Canada, and it can be yours for as little as 29 cents a week if you sign up at the student/retired rate, and you can do that right at fibush.com.
From the Town Fair Tire Studios, Boston's home for sports is WBZ-FM and HD Boston, 98.5, the Sports Hub, the Beasley Media Group Station.
Yes, the Tower Site calendar will return at least for the 2019 edition. In fact, the 2019 edition is now on presale through the fibush.com store. You can get your 2019 calendar at a special discount price, and if you haven't gotten your 2018 calendar yet, you can add one of those to your orders for just $1 plus shipping, or you can get the 2018 calendar by itself if you still need one right now for just $5 plus shipping. That's all at fibush.com. And click on store for the fibush.com store.
W283CD Sterling, WWFD Frederick, WTOPHD3 Washington, WWWTFM HD3 Manassas, WTLPHD3 Braddock Heights Frederick. The gamut.
That legal ID belongs to an unusual Washington, D.C. area radio station. The Gamut is a station that, as we will hear, plays pretty much everything. It plays it over a bunch of different platforms, including terrestrial AM radio, FM translators, and FM HD subchannels, not to mention streaming. And now it's reaching at least a few listeners through all digital AM as it becomes the first station in the country to get FCC experimental permission to experiment with the all-digital HD radio mode. I was joined on Skype by Dave Colasar, who is the chief engineer for the station, the program director of the Gamut, and all-around cook and bottle washer at Hubbard Radio in Washington. We talked about how this all got started and where he thinks it's going.
Let's talk. First of all, this is something, if I recall correctly, that has been kind of gestating for a few years, this idea of taking an AM that's not doing a heck of a lot on its own and trying to go all digital. When did this specific station get into the mix for this?
Well, I had come up with the idea, I think, at either the end of 2016 or at the very beginning of 2017. And I had approached our local management about the idea of using the MA3 mode on WWFD as essentially an experiment, because most of our listening was actually, at the time, we didn't have an FM translator, and most of our listening was on the Washington, D.C. HD subchannel of WTOP, WTOP FM HD3, and also a lot of our listening was on the stream. It was getting tougher and tougher to point people to 8:20 a.m. as an in-vehicle solution for getting the Gamut. I just happened to be attending the Consumer Electronics Show in January 2017, and I approached Mike Raid of Xperi during the show, and I told him that I was the PD and engineer of WWFD in Frederick, and I would like to explore taking the station digital. Of course, he talked with some of the other folks at Xperi, and everybody was very enthusiastic about it, and the idea got started. So the next thing you know, Hubbard and Xperi were talking, and this became a real thing.
So let's back up a little bit. For people who don't understand what the Gamut is, I want to give you a chance to get a little plug in here, because first of all, it's a unique music format, but it's also a really interesting combination of signals that get it to people.
Yes. Well, the Gamut originally started as a home internet radio station that I was programming as a hobby. And in 2011, WTOP was sold from Bonneville Corporation to Hubbard. And our HD3 of WTOP was running by corporate edict, the Mormon Channel at the time.
That.
And with the sale, the Mormon Channel went away. And so we had a vacant HD subchannel looking for programming. I was talking with Joel Oxley, our general manager, and I was kind of joking around with him and said, hey, why don't we put my station on it? He kind of laughed, and, you know, I didn't think much of it. And then he started listening to it. About a month later, he said, yeah, let's do it. I was like, holy cow. Now I've got to clean up all the obscenities. You know, because I wasn't paying any attention for a hobby internet radio station at home. So I spent the next couple months cleaning up the station, re-imaging it. We came up with the name The Gamut for it because it really – it's truth in advertising. It really is the gamut of musical selections. Just about anything in recorded popular culture in this country is fair game for it. So I've got modern rock tracks. I've got CHR tracks. I've got stuff going all the way back, you know, Motown, classic rock, prog rock, 80s new wave, 50s oldies. I even have a few select nostalgia tunes thrown in. It's essentially my personal record collection. I just kept growing it and until it sort of turned into this thing that sounded like a real format. And so we launched it on WTOP HD3. And as the company was building out its HD radio infrastructure, I kept making the case for putting it on the HD3 of all of WTOP's distribution system, because there's three regional FM signals. I made the case that for the listeners, all WTOP signals should be treated equally. They should have this identical programming on all of them. So the Gamut became known as the HD3 of whichever WTOP signal you were tuned into. In 2013, we started talking about this AM radio station that we had in Frederick that was simulcasting Federal News Radio at the time. It wasn't doing a whole lot for Federal News Radio. The idea was suggested, well, why don't we try putting the Gamut on it to see if we can garner a music audience on AM radio?
Mm-hmm.
It sort of took on a little bit of a life of its own. Built up a small following. We got a translator for it in 2017. And with the translator, that enabled me to think, well, what's the next step for 820, given that most of our AM audience migrated to the translator? How can 820 be useful to the station now, to this format? And since it is, as you will probably agree, it's getting harder and harder to convince people to listen to music on AM radio, I came up with the idea of running the all-digital mode. That's when I had approached Xperi, and off we went on that.
So it helps at this point, obviously, that because you're running this as a station without commercials and therefore without revenue that would get disrupted by this, that had to have made the case a little bit easier to make to corporate, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we've had some offers to buy some commercials on it, and the general feeling of management has been, let's just kind of keep it fun and keep it non-commercial for the moment, because I think the general feeling is it's not costing Hubbard very much to operate it, and we're getting quite a lot of goodwill by running it. And it's also a very fun thing to do. And I think I'm very lucky to have great management over at over in Hubbard, D.C. to have Joel see something that I'm really passionate about. He sees that I'm really passionate about this, and he kind of I guess you could say he allows me to indulge myself in something like this. I think he believes that allowing these innovative ideas to happen. You know, I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, but allowing these things to happen, you never know where they may lead. For instance, even though the gamut running all digital on 8:20 a.m. may not lead to an instant revenue stream for Hubbard DC, what it may end up doing is proving the concept of digital AM radio. And Hubbard, as you know, owns plenty of other AM radio stations. And down the line, a business case could be made for taking some of our other stations all digital.
So let's talk about the mode a little, because there's still some confusion out there, I think, about exactly what all digital AM entails. Let's start with what AM/HD is right now, if it's, you know, so-called on-channel hybrid. So you've got the traditional analog signal in the middle, and then you've got the digital carriers off to either side of it, taking up a whole lot of spectrum. I think people don't understand that this is something kind of different, right?
The current mode of broadcasting, Xperi, formerly known as Ubiquiti, calls it the MA1 mode, or the hybrid mode, where, as you said, there's carriers in the middle. The analog signal is in the middle with its audio bandwidth restricted to 5 kilohertz, with the digital carriers on either side of it. And it takes up not just its existing channel, but the adjacent channels as well. So it's a little bit of a bandwidth hog, and it creates a little bit of interference. And it has a problem in the sense that the carriers, because they're off to the side, they have to be so far down from the main, from the peak power, from the carrier power, that they don't travel very far. So you can only hear the signal, you know, I don't know, maybe 10, 15, 20 miles away, say, you know, on a big 50,000 watt station. I'm just pulling these numbers out as estimates. It can be disruptive, the transition on the receiver from analog to digital. You know, you get the digital signal, and then all of a sudden you go out of range and you go back to the analog signal, and you kind of realize how inferior analog AM can sound. The mode is a compromise at best. Most broadcasters aren't going to want to give up or to risk losing their analog listeners by going to all digital right away. So you have to keep the analog carrier on as long as there's analog receivers out there and most of your listeners are there. It comes at the price of the digital not being all that it can be. And right now, we're, I think, in the DC market, about 20% of car radios on the road right now are capable of hearing an HD signal. That, I think, is a pretty decent number.
And if they're capable of hearing the hybrid HD, they are capable
of hearing the all-digital mode, which is called the MA3 mode. And the MA3 mode has about double the data rate of the hybrid mode. So it allows you a much better sounding audio signal. It can allow you data services like album artwork and even some of the paid data services that go on FMHD could theoretically be put on AMHD as well. Given decent audio quality, title, artist, album artwork, you know, on an AM signal, you've essentially achieved parity in the dash with FMHD, streaming, satellite. So this is a real this has some real benefits for AM broadcasters. And on top of that, because the analog carrier is off, all of your licensed power can go into your digital transmission, which carries just as far and maybe perhaps a little further than the analog signal. So all of a sudden now you're transmitting throughout your entire coverage area a digital signal that can be received and received quite well.
So that's an important maybe in there, because without doing testing like this, and the whole reason, as I understand it, why you're eager to do this and why Xperia is eager to do this, is to find out, okay, you put this out here in the real world, in the noisy real world AIM environment that we all know far too much about. Let's find out how it works, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, the noise problem on AM is quite severe, and there's no regulatory appetite for noise mitigation on the AM band. So broadcasters are kind of stuck with the band as it is. And one thing that digital does with forward error correction is it can overcome and mitigate some of the worst effects of the noise. So digital may be a technical solution to dealing with the noise as it is, instead of trying to reduce the noise through regulatory action, which the FCC probably doesn't have any appetite for anyways.
So at a nuts and bolts level, and correct me if I'm getting this wrong here, where the analog signal now is, you have the bulk of your digital QAM carriers that go out, what, about 5 kilohertz either side of the center of the channel?
The primary carriers go out plus or minus 5 kilohertz, and then out to plus or minus 10 kilohertz, there are secondary carriers that are down a little bit, you know, in order to meet the mask. So the bandwidth utilization of the full MA3 mode is plus or minus 10 kilohertz, which really is about the same spectral utilization as an analog AM signal. In our first initial tests, adjacent channel interference may have actually improved a bit. There was I got a report from a listener in Pikesville, Maryland, who, you know, that's probably, you know, a good, you know, 30 or so miles away from the transmitter. And in addition to his receiver locking, he could tune over one click over to 830 and could all of a sudden hear a station in Pennsylvania that he couldn't hear before when we were broadcasting in analog on 820.
I was going to say, I know you have powerful neighbors. I was actually just at that station in Reading, ironically enough, last week, WEEU, and they're putting out 20 kilowatts of analog on 830, and then you have a neighbor on the lower side on 810 over in Annapolis. So you definitely have a good test case there. Talk to me a little bit about what was involved. I know Kentronix was there working with you on making sure that that you were flat with your antenna system over the occupied bandwidth of this. Talk to me a little bit about what the transmission system looks like for this.
Our main transmitter is a BEAM6A, and we're using a Nautel exciter and importer. Actually, a Nautel exciter and a multicast plus box. And then our backup transmitter, which has not been converted to HD yet, is a Gates 5. And we are going to try to hook up an ASI, a BEASI 10 to that. We haven't converted our Gates 5 yet because it, until the other day, was our analog transmitter. So so that is our those are our transmitters, and the antenna system, the phaser is was originally an old Gates phaser. The WWFD has an interesting history. It first went on the air, I believe, as WMHI in 1961 as a daytime directional signal on 1370, 500 watts daytime. In 1987, it was converted to 820 in order to obtain night authorization. And so one of the two towers was moved across the yard to reorient them. Height was added, as well as top loading, and a new phaser was put in. The new phaser, what was the new phaser, now the old phaser, was We swept it. Kintronics swept it and took a look at it and just determined that there was no way this thing was going to pass digital as is. So they suggested some modifications so that we could optimize the bandwidth. So we ended up rebuilding and doing some pretty good modifications of that phaser. So I guess you could say that in that old Gates cabinet from 1961, it's on its third phaser. And the ATUs have gotten some really significant overhauls as well. All the networks were modified to widen the bandwidth, and then so that we can return right back to our license parameters, except with a much more linear array that could even pass the hybrid mode, which is harder for an antenna system to pass than the all-digital mode because it has wider bandwidth requirements. The system, when we started, if you swept them, they looked like the passbands looked like notches, and now it looks nice and broad. And Kintronics did a really fine job talking us through what to do, what to modify. They designed, they sent us a schematic, they held our hands. Mike Raid from Xperi, being that he doesn't live too far away from the transmitter site, he was certainly willing to come down and lend a hand and help me rebuild the array, rebuild the tuning houses and the phaser. There were plenty of times where Mike and I would be on the phone with Kintronics talking about what we were seeing and what we still needed to do. And so Kintronics, they were really great to us. Tom and Josh King and Jim Moser, they all helped out very much, and certainly was quite the brain trust that we needed to get the array tuned up and to talk us through everything. And it was the first time that I had tuned up an array from more or less from scratch. So it was a learning experience for me. I spent time. I read both of Jack Layton's books, Directional Broadcast Antennas and Directional Broadcast Antennas Made Simple, to learn as much as I could so I knew what I was doing. And I know a whole lot more about AM directional arrays than I did when I started.
Daytime, you're non-directional, 4,300 watts, right? So the directional is only at night.
Yes.
430 watts. So what was involved? Was there custom software then that had to be provided for the Nautel Exciter from Xperi?
No. The MA3 mode is baked into all of the firmware builds of these exciters, I believe. That's probably something that I'll need to check with Mike Raid on. I don't
know. Sure. What you did require, however, was special experimental authorization from the commission, right?
Yes. And Gary Cavell over at Cavell Mertz was very helpful in lending his expertise for that. He knew what we needed to say, who to talk to within the FCC in order to get the authorization.
Well, he knows his stuff. I assume the commission, with all the AM revitalization stuff that they're trying to do over there, that probably was not a tough sell to them.
No, it's not. In fact, I actually happened to have lunch by accident with Jim Bradshaw over at NAB. I went to the regulatory session, and I happened to catch him for lunch. We were talking. And I had pitched to him the idea that the all-digital AM could be viewed as a logical next step in AM revitalization in terms of these stations have translators, and so now a lot of their audience is parked on FM for the moment. Then so the next step would be, well, okay, that's not AM revitalization. That's listener displacement to the FM band. Mm-hmm. So what do you do when you have a place to park your listeners, your analog listeners? Then go ahead and try to get them back on the band, sell them the extended range and better sound quality. So as you're driving around and the translator starts to fade, tune your radio back to the AM. and listen to the extended coverage in decent sound. And that could be another avenue of or the next logical step of AM revitalization. So I was very fortunate to be able to catch Jim in the halls of the food court.
That's the beauty of NAB. You run into people like that and you have those conversations. So you're authorized to do this for a year. What happens now? I mean, I assume that there's going to be some fairly intense on the ground, driving around, taking signal measurements and listening to see how this really works, right?
Yes, there will be a lot of driving around. We're going to partner with both Hubbard's going to partner with both Xperi and NAB Pilot to conduct some testing in terms of how far does the signal get out. We may try some different modes. Like we may for comparison compare analog to MA1 to MA3, just so we can document, the same transmitter, same facility. How do these modes perform compared to each other at the same facility? But at the end of the day, we're going to always flip it back to the all digital MA3 mode.
What's the data rate that you get on that?
It's about 40 or 42 kilobits, I believe, which is it's higher. It's a higher bit rate than most FM HD2s. Some HD FM HDs with subchannels run about that data rate on their main channel. But with the codec, it sounds quite good. When we first turned on the MA3 mode into the dummy load, with the transmitter into the dummy load and just listened to it, we were all kind of taken aback, kind of like, wow, this is AM. And we were all pleasantly surprised.
Are you going to try dividing it up and doing an AM HD2 at all?
That's technically possible. I'm not going to do it. I intend to keep the station a nice, decent sounding main audio channel, and then I'll carve out some bandwidth for data services like album art. Now, as part of the testing, I wouldn't be opposed if Xperi is part of their testing, if they wanted to temporarily create an HD2 on it just to try it out. I'd be amenable to that, but I'm going to push to at the end of the day, we're going to, as our standard mode of operation, keep all the bandwidth for the main audio channel.
He's not just the engineer, he's the program director, and this is how you can tell.
Well, also too, since the secondary carriers are a little bit further down, an AM HD2 would not have quite the range that an HD1 would have.
So if you're getting fringe reception, you're not getting those secondary carriers, does it drop back to mono or to,
correct. Yeah. It will negotiate back down, which is part of the reason why it can travel as far as it does.
Sure.
Because the primary carriers are just as powerful as what your analog carrier was. And the range on those will be pretty darn good.
So to wrap this up, what is the expectation? I mean, obviously this is, as you said, being done in part because there's not a lot of listenership at this point on the analog AM820. Are you going to be doing any on-air promotion to let listeners know to try this out, or just wait and see if anybody notices?
Absolutely. I'll be doing on-air promotion. The goal would be to get people, once they're tuned into our FM signal and it starts to fade, have them come back to the AM and keep going and keep driving. Many people have an HD radio in their car and don't realize it. So if we run promos and ask people to tune back to AM 820 if you have an HD radio, enough people will give it a try, hopefully, and all of a sudden they'll hear the carrier. They'll hear the signal, the digital signal. And then everybody who's heard it so far has been very surprised by it. It certainly exceeds their expectations. All the listeners who have contacted the station so far, it certainly exceeds their expectations in terms of range and fidelity.
I am certainly looking forward to getting a chance to come down to the D.C. area and give it a listen. Unfortunately, my route down to D.C. from Rochester takes me right through Frederick and right by your site. So that'll
well,
make
very
it
cool.
Easy.
Well, then you have to drop by. We'll give you a
Absolutely.
Tour.
Dave Colasar, thank you so much for your time. I suspect we will be talking to you again at some point as this testing continues and you learn more about how all this works. And if people out there are listening to this and get a chance to hear your audio and want to report back to you on how it's sounding, where should they reach you?
Okay, well, they can reach us. Probably the easiest thing would be via the Gamut's Facebook page. They can search for The Gamut on Facebook, G-A-M-U-T, The Gamut. And they can also email Gamut, G-A-M-U-T, at HBI.com. And HBI, of course, stands for Hubbard Broadcasting International.
Excellent. Listen to that stream because it's a neat format and really nothing
yes,
else
the
like
stream,
it out
the
there.
Stream is on thegamut.fm. So if you're out of range, you can go to thegamut.fm and just hear what this format actually is.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much.
300 and some miles north of Washington are New York's Adirondacks. They're a very pleasant place to be this year. And they're also a place with increasing numbers of local radio owners, a radio group that had gone near to collapse up in that area, spun off its stations to several different owners. One of those potential owners is a man named Ricky Lee, who, as you will hear, is not an American citizen, but is trying to use the FCC's new rules allowing foreign ownership to become a radio owner in the Adirondacks. I sat down with Ricky at the NAB show in Las Vegas to talk about what he's up to in the Adirondacks and hear about his experience with the FCC's foreign ownership rules.
Before we get to what you're doing in the North Country, how's the show been for you?
The show's been great. Radio kind of shrinks a little year by year that I've been coming, but it's great. It's really great to see new software more than equipment, I guess, being developed, which is really, really great as a digital guy. I really love that.
We are, and I feel bad saying this, looking over at El Celsi and all of his exciting boxes and hardware here, but, I mean, we're kind of moving out of the era of boxes.
Do you know what? Yeah, and talking of the SAS booth, they have an incredible 1U audio engine that is literally over there, and, you know, I'm an Axia guy, so that might be a swear word over here, but I'm impressed with their 1U audio engine. I can't believe they've managed to fit it in a box. At first, I didn't know if it was real or not.
It has made me think about the size of what those used to be with the blue panels and the blinking lights.
Oh, God, yeah. And they still have one around the corner that they're demoing. But, yeah, it's incredible how things, some certain things are good to be big, like phone screens and stuff, I guess. But digital boxes, less room in the rack, great. Awesome.
That may not be obvious from listening, but you're not actually from the North Country.
Well, not the north of this country, no. I'm originally from the north of England. But yes, that would be a good observation.
And you are in the process now of working through, and you're actually one of the first to work through this FCC foreign ownership approval process with the intent of buying a radio station up there in Tupper Lake. What's the appeal for somebody from the north country of England of owning a small radio station up in the Adirondacks?
Well, a very good question. The Adirondacks, for anybody that's ever visited, are just a magical place. You know, a beautiful landscape, year-round fun. You know, the snow that they're still getting in April, which is mad, keeping the mountains open for snowing, snowmobiling. It's just so much fun, and it's a real magical place to be around the festivity times of Christmas and stuff. And me and my wife have visited the Adirondacks on a number of occasions. Fell in love with the area as a place we like to go on vacation. So when the opportunity arose to potentially own something and that the FCC were maybe relaxing the rules and allowing for foreign ownership, this opportunity was just too good for us to pass. And I think if we had it passed, Tupper Lake would have probably lost its radio station and the commission would have the license back by now.
I mean, you're literally bringing this station back from the dead here.
Yeah. And what I have been hugely surprised about is that the radio station was associated with another FM, and it rebroadcast that for many years. We've got great local support from Tupper Lake. The locals are talking nonstop about it. It's really great because me as a British person walking in and saying hello and just buying a coffee or something, they go, oh, are you the guy that's buying the radio station? And for those guys, they're really excited to have a local station back in the area. And although it was only down the road, 20 miles away, they actually feel like they lost their local radio station many years ago. So they're delighted to get something back on the FM dial that they can listen to that will be of local appeal.
A long 20 miles between Tupper and Saranac and Placid.
Yeah, it is. It's a beautiful drive, and they're very much connected. You know, everyone from Tupper Lake will go to Saranac and Placid to do shopping. Actually, more so, people from Tupper Lake go to Plattsburgh to you know, if they want a school uniform, they go to Plattsburgh. If they want a car, all the big dealerships are in Plattsburgh as such. That yes, there are others in the Adirondacks, but there's driving in the Adirondacks seems to be a way of life. But there is definitely more connection between Saranac and Lake Placid because they're only 7 miles apart. Tupper Lake is having a huge regeneration with the amount of money that's been spent, the development that's in Tupper Lake, the mountain that they're planning to reopen, Big Tupper, at the end of this year and going into the 2019 winter season. So Tupper really feels like a place that that is up and coming, and they're really excited about the stuff that they're doing rather than getting involved with Saranac and Lake Placid.
So talk me through the process. Where are you now with the commission, and what's your expectation for the time frame to get this nailed down?
So where we are, we filed our petition. That went up for public comment on the 5th of March, just closed for public comment. We're lucky that nothing has come up in that we're delighted about. We have to now wait for a collective group called Team Telecom, which consists of the Department of Justice, Homeland Security, for them to do their research on me and my wife to ultimately, as scary as it sounds, to see if we're a threat to the United States. In our petition, we've said that, you know, I'm obviously British. Britain and the United Kingdom are the United States' closest allies. Poland is also an ally where my wife is from, but they're going to do their research. And it's not something that we've not done before. To live in the United States, I obviously had to go through rigorous background checks before I was able to be part of American life. So we have to wait for them to do that. The annoying thing is, because you know, we're one of the first people to do this, no idea on timescale. We're hoping, we think that it'll be a 6 to 8 month complete process. We're a month and a half into that, so you know, hopefully for us to get back up onto the mountain to build it, I'd like to do it before winter. But end of September, I think around about September, October time, I think is probably a sensible timescale.
You have programming and staffing plans in place yet?
Yes and no. Not staffing. Deliberately because we don't want to, you know, put all of our eggs in that basket for the FCC to go no. Because they have the right to do that. And if they do, then that's where this story ends. But in terms of programming, yes, we have put together a website which allows people to sample what we think the radio station is going to sound like right now. And they can go to lakefm.com and do that. We've put up some Bring Back 102.1 forms to allow people to show their local support, which we've had tremendous support on. So the format, yes, I think we're going to go with the classic hits, late 60s all the way to early 90s. The format feedback that we've got so far has been great. We've spoken to the other local guys, the guys at WSLP, who have bought WLPW and what was NBZ AM, that's now WVSL. Those guys are working on their formats that we are aware of, and we have collectively said we don't want to replicate any sounds. So we think what we've created will fit perfectly into the market to add to the other radio options.
Fantastic. I know it's never easy doing small radio anymore, but it sounds like you feel you've got a plan that's going to work here.
Yeah, we think we have. You know, originally when we came into this, the local studio rule had just been just come into place, and we may take advantage of that. But me personally, I'd really like to build something in Tupper. I think it's important to be seen. This project is never. It's not. This is not a get rich project. I'm probably going to spend more money on this than I'll ever get out of this. But this for me was about. You know, I just didn't want to see this little radio station die and disappear. It's real sad when that happens. Ownership is something that I've wanted to do for a very, very long time. We think we can make this work with being lean, being very locally focused, and using the technologies that I'm very familiar with. And I think technology is going to help us out a real lot with allowing us to have voice tracked shows rather than having a personality sat in the studio all of the time. So we think we can make it work. But you're right, small radio is very tough, and we're not expecting an easy ride.
Going to come up and follow up once you get it on the air.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Ricky Lee, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you very much for your time.
Lake FM wants to bring the greatest hits back to the Tri-Lakes. From the start of your morning through the workday and all weekend long, we'll be playing songs from your favorite artists, including the Doobie Brothers, Steve Miller, and the Eurythmics.
Sweet dreams are made of these.
Show your support by connecting with us on Facebook. Just search for Bring Back 102.1 FM. Now, back to the Tri-Lakes greatest hits. Online, and hopefully soon, at 102.1 FM. This is Lake FM.
And that wraps up another edition of Top of the Tower, the Phibush Media podcast. Remember, we are brought to you by Phibush Media and StationSale.com, where if you are interested in adding stations to your portfolio, you'll find some great listings this week, including a rare opportunity to be on the FM dial across all of Milwaukee through a high-power translator and AM combo. That's all at StationSale.com. And, of course, by Northeast Radio Watch, bringing you all of the news of technology, programming, and business from radio and TV across the northeastern U.S. and eastern Canada, now in its 25th year. Subscribe now at phibush.com and get all of that great information right in your inbox first thing every Monday morning. Thanks for listening to the Top of the Tower podcast. We will be back next week. I'm Scott Phibush.